Yeah, David?
Do you want to go back?
Back where?
Back to the best.
Back to the best?
Back to the best. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Back to the Best. I'm David.
And I'm Grace, and this is our podcast where we talk about all the best things from the 90s to the 2000s, which is also known as the best times.
To all of our first-time listeners, welcome, and to all of our former besties returning.
Welcome back. I have a question.
I have an answer. Great.
Why is your funny bone called your funny bone? Because it hurts and is uncomfortable when you hit your funny bone. It doesn't make me laugh. It's not funny.
That is a fantastic question. And I'm going to start by turning off my ceiling fan because I noticed that I can hear it.
Okay. You go ahead. You turn off your ceiling fan. And while David's turning off his ceiling fan, this is just time for him to think about the answer to the question. Oh, he turned off the light accidentally. Almost couldn't see him. The light's back on. But I just hit my funny bone a couple minutes ago and it hurts. It's not funny. Oh my God, he's really struggling.
So funny bone.
Do you know what I mean? Like it hurts when you hit your funny bone.
It's not funny at all.
It's not funny.
The funny bone, according to the first article that came up, kidshealth.org.
Oh, we always, if there's one thing we trust here at Back to the Best, it is kidshealth.org.
Okay, we have two different articles that I'm seeing here. According to kidshealth.org, the funny bone got its nickname because of the funny feeling you get after you get hit, after you hit it.
Mm.
But your funny bone isn't actually a bone at all. Running down the inside part of your elbow is a nerve called the ulnar nerve, U-L-N-A-R. That nerve lets your brain know about feelings in your fourth and your fifth fingers.
That makes sense because when you hit your funny bone, you do feel it in the fourth and the fifth finger.
Now I'm looking at the New England Baptist Hospital, big in the 90s.
huge. Really hit its peak in the 90s.
They agree. On February 12th, 2019, they said bumping your funny bone is not funny at all. It hurts.
It hurts.
And then in addition, it's not even a bone. So why is it called the funny bone? The funny bone is the spot in the back of your elbow where the ulnar, they love the ulnar nerve. One of the three main nerves in the arm rests against the humerus, which is the upper arm bone.
Humor.
The nerve, of course, runs from your shoulder into your hand. Where it's mostly protected by bones, muscles, and or ligaments, and or.
Not both?
Not one of the, why and or? Is yours protected by bone? Mine protected by ligaments? As the nerve passes the elbow, it is protected only by skin and fat, making it so vulnerable to bumps.
It's the most vulnerable.
And so when you hit your funny bone, you're actually hitting the nerve itself or hitting the nerve against the bone and compressing it. Just the compression, you guys. The result is pain, tingling, numbness. And there are two thoughts on where the name funny bone originated. It may be based on the resemblance between the name of the upper arm bone, the humerus, and the word humerus. Used to describe something funny. They're very in depth here at the New England Baptist Hospital. And it may also refer to the odd sensation when it is struck.
It is an odd sensation. Like I'm still feeling it.
I think all I can say is my body's many parts and this is where it starts.
And this is where it starts. Phalanges, I have 10. And metatarsals then. I got some tarsals too. I put them in my shoe.
She's telling the truth.
Telling the truth. God, that was such a good.
So good. Wow. Although that episode of Hannah Montana, how the hell did not a single one of those class members think, oh, she sounds like Hannah Montana singing a Hannah Montana song?
We just, you just have to let it go, right? Because there's no way that none of them would know. But you know what? Bones are big in the 90s. And we just thought we'd start this episode out with just some bone chat.
Ooh, wait, ready? Ready?
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm very excited.
Back to the bone. The amount of times
so many times
we'll be talking about something and realize you can just really add anything to back to the.
Every time we say something, it sounds perfect. Like it sounds like it works every time.
What was it that we were talking about that we were talking the other day? What was it?
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that was really good.
It was really good.
I can't remember what
it
was. I
know exactly what you're talking about, but I can't remember what it was. But knowing us, it will come. It will float its way in.
Okay, so we had gotten an email that we weren't sure if it was spam or not. And it was basically somebody promoting a blender. And in this email, they said that they loved our short videos. So I had not seen it yet. And Gray screenshotted it to me and said, everyone loves our short videos. I said, people are obsessed with our short videos. And we've also always known that blenders would be our thing. Gray says, we are best friends, podcast hosts, short video content creators. And then Gray said, oh, we always just blend, blend, blend. And then I said in all caps, blend. Back to the blender. What a long answer for this.
No, but it was necessary. It was the backstory. We needed to fill them in. Back to the blenders. Back to the blender.
Then Gray said, OMG, just, ha ha ha.
It blends
no,
right
I
in.
I said, it works. Gray said, it's too good. I said, we are blender babes.
If anyone, David and I say this often, but if anyone ever got a hold of our text thread, I mean, it's like a stream of consciousness, really. We just, pretty much anything that happens, it's the most traumatic thing you'll ever read.
A lot of all caps.
A lot of all caps, like big time drama, gasps. You can just feel it jumping off the page.
Is it usually warranted? No.
No.
But is it necessary?
Listen, that's why we have each other. Oh, it's 100% necessary. It's why we have each other. I mean, we've talked about this on here before. I don't know why this made me think of it. I think the drama of it all, but like, not to bring it up, but when one of the Queen's dogs passed away years ago, you should have seen.
Oh my God, Vulcan.
Vulcan, David and I were not well. And it was just one of those moments where that you would have thought it was our dog.
I want to say we've talked about this video we've done at least 20 to 30 times. But again, our most dramatic thing that we've done is when the Lizzie McGuire reboot was canceled and we sat in silence for 10 minutes. And that kind of brings us into today's episode because the whole world was upset when the Lizzie McGuire reboot got taken away. Our entire worlds came crumbling down.
Crumbling.
Again, not to be dramatic,
I mean,
or anything.
For God's sakes. No, not to be dramatic. We dressed in all black. I mean, just take it as it is. We were just devastated. We, as David mentioned, we sat in silence.
And this would have probably been now like 1 or maybe even 2 months ago. There was one of the writers who was working on the Lizzie McGuire reboot, Jonathan Hurwitz, who made some TikToks basically saying what the plot of this show would have been. And it like, it brought all of that back up, I feel like, for both of us about how much we wanted to see the show.
It was just great to get a little bit of it. But then you felt that like anger again because you just wanted the actual show to come out because he was able to share some of the plot lines and some of the stories that they wrote, especially in the first two episodes.
And if for whatever reason you did not read the title of this episode before
Look
you clicked
before
it.
Clicking.
Jonathan is here.
Jonathan's
AKA
here.
One of the writers on this iconic reboot that never saw the light of day is with us today on the podcast, sharing some of the things that he mentioned in some of the TikToks, some of the things not mentioned in the TikToks about some of the plot that would have been in this show, what Miranda would have been up to, whether or not they had the theme song. And I'm afraid to give too much away before we get into this interview.
I know. We hope you guys love this interview. We, like David said, chatted with Jonathan about the reboot. And you know that we just dabbled in some 90s and 2000s favorites that Jonathan shared with us. Just a little, we love to dabble in it. But I feel like we have to stop because we're going to give it away.
Here comes the interview. We'll see you again in the outro, as if we're not going to be in the interview.
Everyone sit down, settle in, and enjoy Jonathan Hurwitz. Hey,
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
we're
Good.
good. Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
I feel like that we all have like the sunny thing going on right now. Are you in LA? Same. Yeah.
The rain
And
has finally
loving a
taken
line
like.
of glasses also.
Yes, we all
I
got the
just said to
memo.
David, I just
Be
said, I was like, should I keep
speckled
them on? Should I not? But
people.
it's a glasses. I think I knew that I would feel left out.
Yeah, you can't have that.
No, we cannot.
Are you originally from the LA area? Are you a transplant like the rest of us?
Transplant, yeah, East Coast boy.
Okay.
Never thought I would be on the West Coast, but it's been like
No.
14 years now.
Oh,
So
wow.
here
What?
we are.
It is hard to go back. David and I are both transplants as well. I'm from the East Coast too, but I guess growing up, we would. My brothers and I just always wanted to come to California on a vacation because we obviously liked it. And then when I was older and graduated, I was like, I need something totally different. And then I've never gone back.
I relate to that.
Did you move out here specifically for the entertainment industry?
Yeah, I had a dream. I had a dream. I had to follow my dreams. I mean, I had a feeling that I would kind of inevitably end up out here. I wanted to work at Pixar since I was like so young. I saw Toy Story when I was 10, and it just like changed my life. So yeah, Pixar is in Northern California, so I moved there right after New York. I am realizing now I'm wearing, you probably, I don't know if you can see it, but I'm wearing my Pixar
Oh
sweatshirt. It's
yeah.
so faint, but it
Oh,
says
okay. Wait, if I
Pixar.
like you just moved and it reflected a
Yeah, it's the light. It depends on
little
how the light hits it.
bit. Is Toy Story your favorite Pixar movie? I know later we're going to get to your favorite pop culture, but since we're here, we have to ask.
I've been asked that question before. I mean, in my interview was asked like about at like interview for Pixar. I say Toy Story because it just was the first one I saw and I fell in love with it, but I love, there's so many other amazing ones. I love Up and Wall-E and Finding Nemo, like Monsters, Inc. Like it's so hard to, the early ones.
I
They're
mean,
all.
Toy Story was totally like it was a little scary sometimes to think about my toys coming alive at night, not gonna lie. Like there were moments where I was like, "Oh, is that
Too
gonna
much.
scare me?" But then a dream come true at the same time because your beloved toys were they could interact with you.
Chalk it up to being like maybe like a lonely in the closet kid in suburban Maryland, but like I spent a lot of time in my room and like had a wild imagination and imagined my toys coming to life, like my toys as friends. So seeing that movie was almost like affirming. Like it spoke to me. It's like, oh, that's what's been in my head.
I always love hearing what movie or what show it is that makes people excited and makes you want to work in this field.
Toy Story.
Was it always writing for you? Did you always want to be in writing, or was there kind of just
Any like
like
animation
in
pulling towards you?
general?
It wasn't, no, it wasn't always writing. I mean, it was a lot of things. I mean, growing up very early on, I was obsessed with animals, and like I volunteered at the zoo and I thought, oh, I want to be like a marine biologist or something like that. And then, yeah, I don't know, it kind of came together maybe in college. I studied English and psychology, love psychology, thought, oh my God, I'm going to be a therapist. And then I don't know, I think it was a through the process of like I basically worked at Disney for 10 years, and in working in things that weren't writing, it kept bringing me closer to writing. Like I had to do all these things that I didn't want to do first before I finally like honored that voice in my head that was like, you've been writing poems about animals since you were like 3 years old. Like I had that writing like interest and energy. And yeah, I finally, it wasn't until I moved to LA that I actually started to like think about writing.
Yeah. Do you think that so when you said you had studied psychology, it made me think, because with writing, you can write for multiple characters, different people, and you're kind of putting yourself in their heads, in their minds. Do you think that helped you at all to just like know the psychology of different types of people?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're absolutely connected. I mean, I remember it was freshman, sophomore year taking classes and just learning about the brain. I took classes on child psychology, child development, and it's absolutely influenced my writing. I mean, I've now ended up writing mostly in the kids and family space, which makes sense, I think, given that psychology background. And also, I come from a family of teachers, my brother, my mom, my aunt, like all young kids. So I also grew up around that and working at summer camps. So like I've been around kids and families. And so I guess it makes sense that that's sort of the space I write in now too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How did you then get started? You said you worked for Disney for 10 years. What was your very first job with them?
So I remember I left New York. I went to NYU for junior senior year and I graduated, and it was like a week later I moved to San Francisco. I got an internship at Pixar. So Pixar was my first real job, I guess. I was an intern and then I was hired as a production assistant. And so I worked there for a couple of years. So started off at Pixar. Yeah, like 13, 14 years ago, I guess, at this point.
Is the Pixar office as cool
I
as
was
the
just
like
gonna say
photos make it seem?
that. I'm dying to see it, and I'm dying to go.
There's a photo of me on that first day, like standing under the lamp and the big sign. And I mean, I dreamed of working there for such a long time. Like it was very, very surreal. One of the best pieces parts of working there is actually like going to that office every day. I mean, it's a beautiful space. I mean, it's really a campus. And there's, a pool and tennis courts and a beautiful cafe, and it is very thoughtfully designed. And just the whole point of the way it was designed is to foster like spontaneous interactions throughout the day. So it was such a cool space. I still miss it. I miss it, honestly.
God, but what a first thing to get
Yeah,
into. That's
it's
so
like
cool. I
inspiration
peak.
every
I
day.
think I start. Yeah. It's a weird thing to like, I dreamed for so long of working at Pixar, and then to be there and to make the decision to leave felt so, it felt wrong. Like this isn't how it's supposed to go. But I had a feeling deep down, and it was right, that to sort of move along in my career, I was going to need to leave to be able to learn and grow and have other experiences. So yeah, but very thankful for it.
Yeah, you're a freelance writer, right? That's the word that can you kind of walk us through what it's like to be a freelance writer? Like how is because the work just kind of comes project to project, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't know if I necessarily always like think about it as in terms of freelance writing, but when you think about it, I guess that is what we all are. Like long gone are the days, like classic old Hollywood days where you were like had a contract with a studio and like were writing. Like that's not how it works anymore. So I would say all of, and when I say like all of us, I guess I'm referring to the people in the Writers Guild. We're hired. It's like a project by project basis, and you have some sort of team of a manager, agent, or lawyer like helping you to kind of find gigs that last for, I don't know, writers' rooms. You can do a season of a show in 3, 4 months maybe, and it's done, and it's the room is over, and it's sad, and then you're in that in-between period where you're waiting to see if you get another season. It's I didn't quite understand what that day-to-day was going to be like when I decided to leave the stability of the corporate world and start pursuing the writing thing. I'm so glad I did, but there are lots of ups and downs to it that can be challenging to navigate.
I feel like any of my friends that are in freelance, I'm like, it sounds so stressful, always kind of like working on one thing, but then have to constantly be thinking of what the next thing is going to be.
Yes, and the industry has shifted in the last like 3 or 4 years. The kind of like the 1-2 punch of the pandemic into the writer's strike has
Oh,
made,
yeah.
it even more challenging to find work. So I'm watching a lot of my writer friends, and I'm included in that, trying to figure out other ways to kind of stay afloat. I mean, I started developing what I consider to be a parallel career 3 or 4 years ago when Lizzie McGuire got canceled. And I have this whole other kind of career in social media marketing that pays the bills while I continue to do the writing on the side with the ultimate goal of getting back to writing full time once things kind of open up.
If the last couple months are any proof, you are very good at your social media because you are everywhere.
It was wild having spent the last couple years helping brands with their social media, making TikToks and Instagram reels for other brands, and then to be the one posting and have something go viral in the way it did felt. It was weird and unexpected. Yeah, all of those things.
Yeah, we always joke that we still can never figure out TikTok, because like we'll post one video that we're like, oh, this is going to be so good. Nothing. Yes. And then Nothing. Post one yes. that we didn't really even plan on posting. Millions mm-hmm. of views. It's crazy.
Yes, there. It's like you want there to be a science behind it, and sometimes there just isn't. I mean, I have continued to post since I post the Lizzie videos, and sometimes put like a lot of thought into my little 90-second thing, and then it gets maybe 200 views, and I'm like, hey, but I really tried. try on that one.
It's also crazy when it's like it's the same person that posted that video that you loved. It's still them. Like mm-hmm. what? But people mm-hmm. just get, well, honestly, the algorithm pushes it out. So that's one thing, but it's the same person. But then like David said, sometimes you'll spend so much time and then one that you're like, oh, we literally took this in one take, didn't even care. And it gets so much more traction.
It is such an interesting kind of like, I don't know, litmus test or to kind of like look at how it captures what is going on in any given moment, like in mm-hmm. the like cultural conscious, like whether it's Lizzie McGuire or I had posted about just the kind of the struggle of finding work and mm-hmm. that tapped into the, you know, so many people are unemployed these days. So it is sort of kind of interesting to look at TikTok trends and just see how it's a reflection of like what's actually going on in the larger, mm-hmm. larger world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you obviously worked on the Lizzie McGuire reboot, then you posted these TikToks. When did you first realize like, oh, the entire world is paying attention to this? Like, was it when you saw like the first article about it, or did people just start reaching out to you?
Yeah. It's when the text started coming in saying Hollywood reporters writing about your TikToks, followed like 30 seconds later, another friend, you're on deadline. Why is your face next to Hillary's? And it all sort of kind of hit at once. I think I posted one or two videos before that that happened. And then I was enjoying talking about it. So I just continued to do it.
We and the rest of the world
so
enjoyed listening.
It's really what, you know, if anybody was questioning if there was interest in this reboot, if Lizzie still had fans, doubt no more. There is... It's proof. The numbers, like the numbers are there. The interest and support was amazing. Was truly, truly wild to see.
Obviously, it's no secret. David and I are huge Lizzie fans, grew up watching the show. And we, we even, when we found out, we made this, David, it's actually very appropriate that you're wearing black. I feel like I should have done that.
We were extremely, we were way too dramatic when the reboot got canceled.
We decided.
Kind of.
We thought that, you know how people are like, just take it. We're going to have a couple minutes of silence for that. We did that literally. And we sat for 10 minutes, like with our camera rolling for 10 minutes, like in silence, wearing all black. Like I pulled my hair back. Like we made a whole scene out of it.
Oh, my God.
And you know what? The feelings are truthful behind it. We're very upset.
I love that. I didn't do anything like that. I should have. I thought that maybe posting this series of videos would kind of bring like a sense of closure to it all. And I think in a sense it did, but I think I will always think about it. Like what if we had gotten to make it? It was so formative to me growing up and so special to be able to work on the reboot. I know this is such like a superficial detail, but I had just turned 30 and it was my first staff writer job, and the show was going to follow Lizzie and she turns 30 in the pilot. And it just seemed like this beautiful kind of full circle kind of moment. And Yeah, I'm still not over it.
We don't blame you. David and I are not writers, but from what we can from what we can understand,
I didn't
you
get
are.
That. Could you try again?
Whoa,
was that
I'm
me?
back. Hold on. What
was it
my
me?
Siri is like, my Siri was just like listening to me and recording what I was just saying. It cut you off.
Mm-hmm. No, that's totally
I'm
fine.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's also not shocking. And I thought it was me because the other day my phone just started playing an episode of a podcast out loud, like in the other room. So I'm pretty convinced that everything just has a mind of its own. We control nothing.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so sorry.
No. Oh my gosh, do not apologize.
It's not. I was just going to say how, as a writer, I imagine you're planning a life in quotes for these characters. You're thinking of these storylines and you're getting inside their heads to write for this story. So to get two episodes out and then it's just like, oh, nope, done. And you guys just have to kind of stop what you're doing. You probably were like, wait, I had so many more thoughts. I have so many more places I wanted to take this.
I mean, yes, absolutely. It was even more though than just the two episodes that got filmed. The first season was going to be 8 episodes and we had like broken the story for all 8 episodes. The first two were shot and filmed and edited and like ready. Mm-hmm. The other episodes 3 through 8 were in various stages, but I was assigned episode 6 and I outlined the episode. I wrote the full episode. Like I have a 33 page script that will never see the light of day. So we were well into the season. So yeah, it does feel like, oh, we spent 4 or 5 months really pouring our hearts into this show. And then for it to end so abruptly without, in my opinion, really any sort of like closure or even an explanation or just communication from the Disney executives as to what was going on, that still just doesn't sit well with me. I mean, we were just told to go home and that was it. We really were finding things out through word of mouth, through seeing articles. I mean, it just, in my opinion, just was not handled well and just sort of left me kind of cold. And so I feel like that's kind of what contributes to me 4 years later still feeling like, oh, it's still not like sitting well with me. Yeah.
Even like, I feel like for Hilary Duff, I remember when she posted those at like, you know, Notes app screenshots, you know, asking for it to be moved to Hulu and then about it actually officially ending. I feel like I hadn't ever seen a main star of a show basically just be like, please move us to a different network if we had to, like, let's do whatever we can to make this work. And then at the same time, it's whenever they had, you know, announced Love, Victor was going to be on Disney, they moved that to Hulu. It was just, it's so unfortunate that they couldn't figure out whatever it was to make it work.
I know. Yeah, it really feels like we just, the timing was not on our side with us being so new and them not really being clear on what they wanted. And I don't know, had it the Lizzie reboot happened later, maybe it would have worked.
There's no whispers of anything starting up again that you've heard. It's just still.
God, I wish. Like there was so many people commenting, like, you know, with, you know, just wanting to know, you know, is there anything happening? And nothing that I'm aware of. I've not that I expected to hear from Disney, but I never heard anything from Disney. I didn't hear anything from Hillary. She is, I don't know. I know she's pregnant. I'm not sure if she had her kid yet.
She looks so pregnant on Instagram whenever she posted.
I know she is pregnant and beautiful and in her own world and doing her own thing, which she totally should. And yeah, no, I truly, truly, truly don't know.
You, of course, and your TikToks posted the plot of these first few episodes. Is there any storyline that was like your favorite that you got to help write and be a part of? And we're also awful at picking favorites, so if you need to say like 5 things, that's totally fine.
I mean, it's, I guess the most like obvious one feels like a story for a new character. So Lizzie was gonna befriend this guy named Carson, and he was loosely based on me. It was gonna be a version of me. And she, Lizzie meets him in an Uber pool. Like she accidentally books an Uber pool. So this is after she sleeps with Ethan for the first time the morning after. And she leaves his place and gets in the car thinking like she ordered an Uber, but it's an Uber pool. Mm-hmm. And there's this dude, Carson, who's in the car with her. And they end up spending the day together and like just become instant friends. And she ends up moving in with him. He has an extra room in his apartment. So he would have been a pretty important part of the reboot. And so get to contribute to his, like his journey and his journey with Lizzie. I think I was most excited about like my episode. I jokingly on day one pitched an idea for a bottle episode where it's just Lizzie and Carson out in West Hollywood. A whole episode is like a night out in West Hollywood. And so that became episode six. So that episode was mostly Carson and Lizzie. Just they go out together and they drink and they talk and they dance. And it has this like really nice, like heart to heart, like at the end of the evening where they're able to like, just kind of be vulnerable with each other. And Lizzie's kind of like, I was supposed to marry this man. Like my ex cheated on me. And I know this isn't okay to say, but I still like it. Like I still have feelings for him. Like I'm not over him. Mm-hmm. And Carson's going through his own journey with guys. And I don't know. I just think it could have been relatable for 20 something, 30 somethings who were just humans and like dating in the world. And sorry, that was a very long answer, but
no, I love it.
This is Jonathan, you're like all we have.
It's so true though.
I forget like all the little like details that I shared on TikTok, but there was one that always made me giggle that we were like thinking about. I don't know if you remember from the original series, but do you remember Matt had one of his best friends was named Lanny.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
And he never spoke. So we had this idea that in the reboot, we would see him just once, maybe in the finale. And he's now a motivational speaker. So it's his job to like, to
hype
speak,
people up,
literally
speak.
Moves people with his words. We were going to have him show up in the finale, which I thought would have been a fun little thing.
Oh my God. It would have been so good. As most of the people I imagine who watch it watched the original show, but those little moments would mean everything to us. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's just like bringing the two worlds.
Yeah. Yeah.
You said you did watch the show, right? The original.
Oh my God. Of course. Yeah. It was formative culture for me. I was probably 11 and 20 when it started. So right in that tween era. And, again, I was very much, I was young and I was in the closet, was not openly gay. And I don't think I was able to articulate it at the time, but I think Lizzie like really spoke to me and was like a spirit guide of sorts. That's why I think it would have been so cool to revisit that world now at my age as like an openly gay adult. Yeah, but yes, very important to me when I was younger.
What was it like then when you got to, I'm assuming you got to meet all the cast for the first couple episodes that they filmed? What was that like?
My inner child was dying. I mean, the first, I couldn't believe when Hillary walked into the room for the first time. So we were all sitting in the writer's room and we knew we had gotten a heads up that she was going to stop by. And when she entered, it's a professional setting. Like there was no room for me to kind of freak out. And so I had to just, you shook her hand. Hi, I'm Jonathan. I'm one of the writers. And she just sat down with us and very quickly all my anxiety, like my nerves just went away. And she's so just sweet and like down to earth and accessible. And very quickly, we all were just talking and sharing stories. And it was so cool to get to know her. And she would come into the room periodically and just sit with us and share stories, not with the intention of saying, this has to be in the show or this is what the show must be about, but really just being generous and just sharing personal experiences that often ended up in the scripts. There's one or two moments in episodes one and two that came directly from her sharing stories with us, just about things that have happened to her that ended up in the show. So I think it would have felt, I think she is already as Hillary kind of relatable and authentic. Mm-hmm. I think that lends itself to Lizzie, which felt like a very relatable character. And I think she would have continued to feel authentic and relatable in this iteration, like adult iteration. At one point, I remember there was a suggestion of possibly having her be a little bit older, and she has kids. So the show is her with kids. Mm-hmm. And it just, that didn't sit well with any of us. You know, that's, you know, Raven's home, which feels right for that. But
yeah,
for what we wanted to do with Lizzie. And yeah, she was a big, big advocate for us.
I'm trying to imagine if it did go that route of her having kids. I think it just would have, because we all grew up with her. So we kind of still wanted to see where Lizzie as the individual was going.
Yes. 100%.
That's kind of how it feels. Yeah. I think that that would have resonated with those of us who watched the original show, seeing her life. And like you said, getting into Ubers and meeting new people and just being young still. I think, that makes sense that was more of the root rather than like a family setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, who's to say many seasons down the line, maybe we would introduce a pregnancy. But yeah, no. We were more interested in focusing on Lizzie. And in one of my TikToks, I brought on one of the other writers, Suzanne, because I really wanted her to share, and I wanted it to come from her because it was her idea. And she had a really great idea for the ending of season one of this reboot, because we really wanted to make sure that we were incorporating animated Lizzie, who was such a
like her
fun,
conscience.
Cool part of the
huge
of
part
the original. And we didn't realize until we went back and watched the original and really, really looked at it that Hillary live action Lizzie and animated Lizzie, you know, they never share a frame. Mm-hmm. It would just cut to, you know, animated Lizzie doing some sort of like gesture or remark on what was happening. So that's how we were going to do it in the reboot, until the final episode where for the very first time you would have seen animated Lizzie and live action, you know, Lizzie in the same frame, and Lizzie was going to turn to her little, you know, inner critic and actually address her for the first time. And like the last line of the first season, I know I can't curse, but she says, shut the F up. And it would have taken us into season two, where there's, you know, it thematically like would get into, you know, essentially like mental health, you know, how do we deal with the voice in our head, you know, the inner critic. We are often our own worst enemy. Mm-hmm. And so we're interested in exploring that through Lizzie's relationship with animated Lizzie.
Especially because at the time that the original show aired, we were all younger. And I mean, mental health was not talked about nearly like it is today. I didn't even know, I never heard the word anxiety. I didn't know what any of that was. So another reason why she was so relatable, it was like the cartoon animated Lizzie.
Yeah.
You would feel like as you, it's like, oh, that's the voice inside my head. Yeah. Like she has that too. And then so.
Yeah, it's part of the relatability.
I just want to see it happen. I want to see.
I know. Yeah, we were looking at like iconic or very like memorable episodes from the original series. And there's one where Miranda has an eating disorder. Mm. That episode is, you know, memorable and people talk about it. And, you know, we talked about it a lot in the room and felt like, you cannot fix an eating disorder in 30 minutes in a 30 minute episode of television. So that we were interested in exploring that too in this season, in having Miranda be a part of Lizzie's adult journey. We were going to address kind of what happened in that episode and explore that for Miranda. So
some of those like gaps that would have been bridged, like bridging some of those gaps from the older show into being able to have a platform to kind of share more about it today.
Yeah. We wanted to honor what the original kind of established and then like expand on it a little bit.
Yeah. Cause I mean, like,
so bummed.
Grace, anytime we talk about it, Grace, you know, always brings up the bra episode of Lizzie.
Oh my God. I remember like it was yesterday, sitting on the couch with my mom, and that was how I got the courage to say to my mom that I felt ready for a bra. I made sure she watched the episode with me. I remember it so well. I was like, it gave me the courage. It was so impactful.
See, yeah, that's the power of TV. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason I wanted to work in TV and be able to write is because when I was a kid, there were shows like Lizzie that that helped me, that made me feel mm-hmm. seen. And so I felt like, God, that's so cool. I'd love to now as an adult be a part of shows that can do that. So,
and you're doing it.
You're doing it.
I'm trying. Yeah. Somebody hired me. I'm not on a show right now, but it's a tough time right now. But I have faith that more opportunities will come mm-hmm. at some point. So,
cause you wrote on, Andy Mack, right?
Yeah. So I started on Andy Mack. I was on all three seasons. That's kind of where I learned how to kind of write for a show. I was a writer's assistant and then wrote a few episodes of it. So yeah, that was my first. Everything I've written is under the Disney umbrella. Cause I went from mm-hmm. Andy Mack to, I wrote a series for Sophia Wiley called Shook.
Okay.
And then Spidey and His Amazing Friends for Marvel, which is on Disney Plus. And then Lizzie. So all Disney.
Sophia, she was the one who was in High School Musical. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. She started off, she was on Andy Mack, one of Andy's best friends. She played a character called Buffy. And then, she was on High School Musical, the musical, the series.
The series, yes.
My favorite. Still trips me up to say that.
Say that every time fast. she is amazing. So talented and has gone off to do amazing things.
Because I feel like Andy Mack is one of those that obviously we were past the Disney Channel age of watching their newer shows. But that's definitely one that I remember like seeing everywhere because I feel like it was a big mm-hmm. deal for Disney Channel. Because isn't that one of the first like LGBT episodes that they had?
Yeah, the first openly gay character. So yeah. Andy's Cyrus. And it's that one also was created by Terry Minsky. So it was interesting being in that room. It's the only gay person in that room and the kind of helping shape Cyrus. And then years later in the Lizzie room, only gay person in that room and helping to shape Carson, who was the gay character on that show. So it's very cool to be able to be in a writer's room and be able to bring your own kind of personal just life and experience to the show, which isn't always the case. For example, mm-hmm. Spidey and His Amazing Friends. Uh-huh. I'm not sitting there telling them about Nights Out in West Hollywood. You know,
it's a whole different Spidey.
Peter Parker going to defeat Green Goblin in the show?
Sure.
Actually,
I was going to say it's kind of interesting.
You never know. You never know.
Spider-Man in West Hollywood.
Build on that. Mm-hmm. Oh my God! Imagine.
I don't hate it.
Spider-Man just like swinging through WeHo
during the Pride Parade or something.
Okay.
My brain is turning.
Guys,
I should write.
Listen, if anyone steals this, we're going to know because we said it first. Yeah. Jonathan's on it.
Jonathan's
don't take
on it.
We'll find, we,
copyright,
we'll find you.
Whatever it is.
Tate and I are not Marvel writers.
I don't think Marvel would allow that, but
we'll make up a new superhero that can do it.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That is really cool though, because like you were saying, you know, Lizzie was such a formative show for you. Then you're writing on Andy Mack. Think of like all the, you know, younger audience who that is such a formative show for them that then you're a part of creating.
Oh my God. Yeah. I wish I'm like looking this way. You can't see it, but there was, oh God, I wish I remembered her name. I think her name was Sadie. Just a really like sweet fan of Andy Mack who started this just on social media, started this little project where she had fans write into her with just sort of like thoughts about how the show has inspired them. And she took everybody's words and wrote them on like little beautiful origami, like paper cranes.
Oh yeah.
And strung them together. It was beautiful. And so we reached out to her and had her send some of them to us. And so when we did our like season finale party, they were hanging in the trees. Like
that's
all
so
these
cool.
Birds
Gosh.
From all these kids, like all around the world who were moved by the show in some way. And so I have one string of them that were kids who wrote in about the episode that I wrote, the coming out episode.
That's so cool.
You know, saying, sort of like how you reacted to that Lizzie episode, and it helped you sort of like have that dialogue with your mom. I got on these little paper cranes, and also just DMs too from all these kids who said like, thank you so much, like for writing that. Like, I just came out to my best friend, or I just came out to my mom. And I mean, I'm just like, would sob like reading these. It's so humbling and cool and moving. Yeah, to be able to be a part of something that helps somebody feel seen and heard. It's really cool.
We're just in awe of writers. I feel like I say that every time. I truly, I don't have that brain, and I am in awe of how you guys can just kind of split your brains to have dialogue for completely different characters. And it's very impactful, the stuff, and it's personal too. You could be sharing something that was personal to you, was personal to someone else in the room, and us as the fans, the viewers of these shows, like the girl who made this beautiful origami, we appreciate it, you know? So I think it's great that she did that for you guys, because you are what creates these shows and these characters. And it doesn't go unseen for most of us.
Well, thank you for saying that. I feel like a friend of mine was pointing out, like, after this, all this kind of Lizzie stuff happened, she was like, think about, like, you know, your favorite movie or your favorite show. And I would guess most people like probably can't name who wrote them. Like, the writers don't often get attention or get a lot of recognition. So it does. Yeah, I don't know. It has been cool to like be able to have a platform to speak like as a writer. I mean, I just didn't think people would really be interested in that. Like, they want to hear like the gossip, the tea. They want actors, or you know, there are people like, I don't know. I think of Fleabag is my like one of my favorite shows. Waller Bridge. Like, people kind of, you know, people would know who she is because she's in it as well. And but yeah, most of the time people don't really, I think about us little writers.
I do feel like you're definitely changing that though with these TikToks, because now, especially with a show like this, that everyone's just grasping for any kind of detail of what we were going to get. Yes. Now they realize like, oh, it is the writers that do
that have these,
all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I would love to like do more posts, like more Lizzie posts. I have reached out to some of the actors just to see if they'd be interested in doing a video. So, maybe I'll do another one in the future. We'll see.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we're here for it. Let us know.
And then, of course, our podcast is all about the 90s and the 2000s. So we have to ask you about some of your other favorite shows and movies and other things that you loved growing up. So obviously we already talked about Lizzie McGuire, but what were some of your other favorite shows from your childhood?
So I feel like, sorry, Disney, is it okay to talk about Nickelodeon for a second?
Oh, yeah.
We talked about it all.
Yeah.
I did like, so it's, yeah, I think I really drifted towards like live action stuff on Disney and then animation with Nickelodeon. So like, I really love Doug and Hey Arnold. Mm-hmm. So I watched a lot of those, SpongeBob a little later on. And then on Disney, Lizzie, of course, Even Stevens, Boy Meets World. Yeah, those are probably my favorites.
Based off of these so far, we all three of us would have been best friends growing up, because those are all of our favorites.
Our favorite shows.
Well, because it hit. I was born in 89. So when I was about 9 or 10, yeah. So like 1998, 1999, those were like prime pop culture years for me. Mm-hmm. I think that's when Lizzie might have been on.
Definitely like 2000, 2001 for sure.
Maybe it was a little later. Yeah. I just know I have like 1998 in my head as the year that Britney Spears entered my life, and 1999 when Destiny's Child entered my life. Mm-hmm. And those two people became very formative as well.
Wait, we did want to ask you, since you brought up Destiny's Child, I saw that you wrote that Beyonce grabbed your hand 2 times at concerts, and that you went to like, you've been to like 15 of her concerts.
I've all of
Are
that
you like
correct.
A huge Beyonce fan?
Massive. I've Massive. Seen her 15 times. And she has grabbed my hand twice.
Okay,
yes.
How did that happen?
It was August 4th, 2014 at 9:36 p.m.
Okay.
Okay. Okay,
take us there. Really take us there. We are there. Everyone close your eyes.
Mm-hmm. That is, and mind you, I like don't have a great memory. that I remember. Mm-hmm. So it was, I had just moved to LA in 2014. She was playing and I went by myself because it's kind of hard to convince friends to spend like $1,000. Like I wanted to be in Beehive, like right next to the stage.
Get that.
Basically when I get a paycheck, like it should just be like to Beyonce. Like,
the Beyonce fund? Like, just
send it to her because it goes into my savings. So I can spend $1,000 on a ticket. And so this was obviously pre-pandemic unfortunately isn't the case anymore, but you could actually get right up to the stage. You could touch the stage. Mm. So I was in the section that was right next to the stage. And she was favoring the other side of the stage, unfortunately. And I was kicking myself because she wasn't coming over to us as much. But finally, she did. And she knelt down like right in front of us. And she held her hand out and grabbed. And I grabbed it and somebody next to me filmed it. So that's the video of it. Cause like I couldn't film it. I was like emotionally blacking out
in the moment. Yeah.
And I still like, I have the video like saved in my favorites. And I just like to just remind myself, I realize this is like, I don't know, even know if it's worth playing, but like I have this video. Oh my God, wait, I got the time wrong. August, it was 9:46 p.m. I'm so sorry.
But you were only off 10 minutes.
That's okay.
I said 9:36, it was 9:46. Yeah, and I have this 10-second video that I just treasure. I watch it all the time.
I would show every single person I meet that video.
Oh my God. Yeah,
it was like before that moment and then after. I mean, it was on a more serious, like, personal note in terms of, like, why, like, my connection to her. Her music, I mean, starting with Destiny's Child, got me through those like kind of tough like tween years. Like what, like I was saying before, school was hard, like having friends was hard. Like it just, I was more comfortable alone, like being in my room. And so music and TV, these were like very just like formative pieces of culture for me. And so her music just got me through, like, and inspired me. And so yeah, I've been a fan for so long now. So getting to be in her presence is, I don't have words for it. I'm a writer. I should be able to describe my experience.
Easier to write for others.
Don't have words. Right above me. Again, you can't see it, but right above my laptop, I have from the 2016 Formation Tour. I have like a custom framed thing that I made with my ticket. Like that's
oh,
in the,
cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
keeping tickets is such a nostalgic thing too, because now they're digital a lot of the time, but having like an actual ticket, I love that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, I still have all mine from the early days. Britney Spears, NSYNC, American Idol's live tour.
Oh yes.
I have all my early.
Oh my God. Tickets. The American Idol's live tour was like, oh, I God, was so starstruck.
Oh my God.
So starstruck. They were right there.
Right there.
Right there.
Right there. My idols.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you think that, not to bring it back to like psychology, I'm just like curious, do you think that people, I'm just trying to think of like equivalents to our, you know, our NSYNCs and Britney Spears, just the way that we gravitated towards them growing up. Just wondering if like kids today, God, I sound so old, kids today, if they're kind of like connecting to these sorts of like pop stars like we are. I mean, I guess they come to them in a different way, TikTok, social media, what have you.
Yeah.
I don't know. We also don't have to answer that here. I'm just
No, I love it.
I feel like we talk about this a lot because we obviously host a nostalgic podcast and we're always talking with each other as well as our guests about things that we loved. And so many times David or I, or even a guest will say like, that was just the peak time. That was the best time to have these. And even that, it's thinking like, all of these shows, and they were all on at the same time, like the Even Stevens, Hey Arnold, Rugrats, Lizzie, like they all, and we don't feel like shows equal that. But then sometimes I wonder, is it just because we grew up with them that we hold those memories? Is that what makes it so impactful? Or like you said, are there artists that sit with us the way those ones did? I don't know. It is weird because I would say no. I don't know anyone today that impacts that way.
My best way to like test this out is I'm thinking of like, so last summer I worked at a camp for queer kids, ages 11 to 18. We talked about movies and shows. They do not talk about it the way, like the way, well, first of all, some of them were like, movies, huh? Those are too long.
Yeah.
So they do.
Yeah, everything's short
like,
form.
They do YouTube. They do TikTok.
Yeah.
So a lot of them were even like, couldn't name favorite movies. Now, some of them like, definitely had TV shows that they were fans of. But oh, it just felt.
It's different.
Different.
Yeah.
It's different.
Well, I think similar to what you said, it's so accessible today. They can find anything and everything in 30 seconds. We had to wait. That came on once a week at 8/7 central. And that was what you got. Yeah. You know, it was like, if you missed it, maybe my mom would put in a VHS and record it before like DVRing was a thing, but it was a household gathering. Everyone would get together and sit down to watch.
Well, even with music too, because it's like, I still remember, I think the first CD I got and I like had to sneak it in the cart was Britney Spears' Baby One More Time. I remember like asking a worker if they could send it to the front, little like 7-year-old me being like, can you send that to the front for my mom to buy? Like,
oh, yeah.
Now it's like nobody has to go buy a CD. Like as soon as it comes out at 9 p.m. on a Thursday, you just click
it. You
just
get it.
I was going to say, that was me with the Ariana album last week. It was Thursday at 9 o'clock, just went on Spotify. And we actually, that's interesting. We're talking about it. We did, like, three of my friends got together to try to make an event.
An event. Yeah.
At 9 p.m. We like put it on the TV and like listen start to finish, like with the lyrics. And I plan on doing that on March 28th at 9 p.m. with Beyonce's, with her new album.
Yeah.
It is sort of fun to make it something special.
It is.
There weren't as many distractions either. Like, and we kind of worked hard for those things. Like if a CD came out, you got in your car or your parents drove
paid
you to
it.
Like to the store and you got it. You had to really want that thing and really love that thing to physically have it. And now everything's on your phone. It's so easy.
Do you remember hit clips?
Oh, David's
I
got a bunch.
Still have mine.
You do.
Yeah.
I love them so much. There was a point I looked like very recently, like months ago, like went on eBay because you can still find them a little bit pricey.
Yeah. God,
I love those. I kind of want
so
it.
So good.
It's just all you needed, a little hit of the clip, or no, a little clip of the
clip
hit.
Of the hit. I never thought of it that way.
A little clip of the hit.
They kept making the different ones. You could get the one where you put in the earbud, then they had the boombox, then they had like the music video one that played the same little cartoon for whatever song you listened to.
Yeah. And you could just like clip it on your keychain. It was like the best.
So cool.
Yeah,
so
it was so
toys.
Cool.
My Tamagotchi.
Love
my God.
Great, but a little stressful. Feeding them, keeping them alive.
We were mothers.
A lot of work.
Oh my God.
We were mothers at age 6. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, we really did have the best things all around. Toys, movies, music. It's not the same
best.
Whatsoever anymore.
The best. I mean, heck, David and I just decided to do a podcast so we can just keep talking about it.
I know. I love it. I was, you remember the, I used to listen to, I loved like theme songs for shows. Like I would just sing them and they get stuck in my head. And given my love of Beyonce, like the Destiny's Child and Solange doing the theme song for Proud Family. I used to listen to that, like just on repeat.
So that was good. That was a great theme song. Oh, that and the Kim Possible theme song.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Catchy.
Was the Lizzie McGuire reboot, I don't know if you even know this or if it got that far, was it going to use the same theme song from the original, or was there a theme song in the reboot?
Somebody asked that, and we hadn't gotten there yet. Yeah, I wish I had an answer to that. We hadn't gotten there yet. I think me personally had a fantasy of like of Hillary maybe recording a version of it. I don't know if she's open to that, but I don't know. I don't know, but that was such an iconic opening sequence with like
it was, the balls.
Oh my God, the balls. They were all just like, balls are just falling. Oh, so iconic.
It was. Well, hopefully we could have you on later whenever Disney comes to their senses and gives us this thing, and we'll have you on to talk about it.
I hope so. Let us pray.
Oh my God, we're going to pray.
No, we need another petition.
I know. I think we did. Yeah, we started
I think
a
we
petition
might have done
about
one.
This. Yeah,
we were very
back.
Dedicated.
I mean, if there ever is one in the future, please let me know so I can post about it, sign it, and
oh, we will.
Thank you so much again for taking your time and
chatting
with us.
Oh my God, of course. Thank you for having me. It's such a
pleasure.
Of
course, we were so excited you said yes.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing everything about the reboot. Because like I said, it's really, it's you're just like our gateway through it. It's all, yeah.
I'm happy to share. It's fun to see it live on.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. It was so nice to meet you.
Yeah, so nice to meet both of you.
Okay, we're back. Here we are. We're back. Just like in the intro, we said that. Did you miss us? We told you we were going to come back. God, they panicked.
A little behind the scenes fact, we recorded the intro 30 seconds ago.
I know. Sometimes you take a longer gap between one and the other. Today, it was just right on in. I think because we had like a good drop off that we were just like, we should get into it, but we will be back. Mm-hmm. So then like, here we are. We're back.
Hello. I don't think we can stress enough how important Lizzie McGuire is to both of us.
Oh my God. You know what baffles me when I think back and remember it, because it didn't feel like this, how a lot of the Disney shows only had that like 3 or 4 season runs.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Lizzie had 20 seasons, but it was because we watched it over and over again.
Well, and also remember way back to our interview with the director of the Lizzie McGuire movie, Jim Fall. And he told us in that interview that there was going to be a like spinoff Lizzie show of her in high school and a sequel to the Lizzie McGuire movie. But the money situation, it never happened.
It's wild that these things haven't happened because everybody wants them. We were talking about that with Jonathan. Look at the reaction from him sharing a few TikToks just talking about some of the plot lines. I mean, they went viral because everybody wants to see this show. And yet it still hasn't happened.
It is like we are taking anything we can get.
Mm-hmm. Oh
my God, if anything, exactly hearing the plot makes us more excited about what we missed.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess excited, but sad. It's a lot of mixed emotions.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, to quote us from the episode you just listened to, Jonathan is all we have. He's all we have. Okay. We just need him to keep spilling little bits because it's like that way we can kind of just pretend that we're watching the episode until maybe
I can like see it in my head.
I know. I feel like I can too. When he was talking about the Uber, like I'm picturing like Lizzie getting into it. Like I'm seeing it like in the city. Like you try to picture what it would be like.
The whole West Hollywood episode.
Oh my God. Guys, we could be in that. We could have like been in that one. So we're basically in the episode, but it didn't happen.
The reboot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, you guys, it couldn't happen. start a petition.
Oh my God. We end up like just saying we were in the reboot because no one can prove that we weren't.
Honestly, very something we would do.
Oh, very, very us. But it was so great to talk to Jonathan because, like we said, he's just kind of like our gateway into this reboot. Hearing about some of the directions that they wanted to go with the characters, I just think it really would have been so nostalgic and just amazing for all of us to see. Because we grew up watching this show. We grew up with them and we want to know where they are now.
I also just love in Jonathan's bio, they have Los Angeles, but then under it, it just says, let Lizzie say F-U-C-K.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let her say it. Let her say it. It's also so crazy how Jonathan said it was just all of a sudden over. You know, like he was saying,
sounds like it wasn't handled.
Yeah, it wasn't really communicated that well. It was just like, oh, no, we're not doing this anymore. I don't know.
Have hope, though.
I know. I do, too. It's if they're looking at their responses to Jonathan's videos and just
that alone. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like people want to see this. We wanted to see it before. We want to see it now. Do not make us do another 10 minutes of silence because we will. We will if we have to. Okay?
We will do it.
We will.
It's going to be 10 minutes of anger this time.
Oh, drop your pen.
I dropped it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also going to drop Jonathan's Instagram where you can all go get your next follow. Mm-hmm. And we're back to Joy. Joy, Jonathan is at Jonathan Hurwitz. And in Jonathan's bio, there is actually a career chats thing. You can schedule a time for a career chat. There's also linked to their TikTok. You can mm-hmm. see all the videos that we talked about where Jonathan shares all the different plot points.
Check him out if you haven't, because it's so interesting. Because again, we didn't get to see this. So definitely check out his videos. It's the best way right now that you can get a glimpse into the reboot.
Yeah, honestly. And just reading the comments is fun too, because mm-hmm. it's all people like us just wanting mm-hmm. to see this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of people like us, you can also follow us. We are on Instagram at BTTB Podcast, Twitter at BTTB Podcast, YouTube.com/Back to the Best, TikTok at Back to the Best, Facebook mm-hmm. at Back to the Best.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, did I say our I website? BTTBpodcast.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we forgot something, if you go to our website, it's all there. It's all going to be all there. And make sure you go give Jonathan some love. Follow him, like his videos, give him all the love, and let's all not take 10 minutes of silence, but we'll take 10 seconds of hopefulness to mm-hmm. hope that the reboot happens, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Thanks.
When you say 10 seconds of hope, what do we do for 10 seconds?
So I think we just have hope for 10 seconds. You know what I like? You just like.
Is it also, is it a silent hope?
If you want, it could be like a silent hope. It could be whatever you do that makes you feel hopeful. Do it for 10 seconds and hope in your heart that it happens.
Set a timer for 10 seconds.
Hope. See, you got to just hope. Hope. We hope for the reboot. We're hoping and hoping. We have hope. Our bodies are filled with hope. We feel
that's
hope
10 seconds.
Flowing.
Stop. We're
okay,
done.
Mm-hmm, we're done. That's it. That's all you get. And hopefully it works.
Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you to Jonathan so much for joining
thank
us.
Thank you, Jonathan. Oh, it was so fun to talk to him. It just felt like we were chatting in the writer's room, which we were not allowed in, which is so rude.
No, they never invited us.
It's no, so it's weird. Really weird.
Yeah. Next
we're like
time.
We're known as writers.
They probably, that kind of sounded like Winona Ryder. They probably just like forgot.
Mm-hmm. No, they just forgot. They were just, they were busy. We get it. It's okay.
And you're all going to be busy because mm-hmm. you have to tune in next week.
You have to. We have another fantastic guest. You have to tune
fantastic
in.
Fantastic guest. We're fantastic. So excited for next week.
Yes.
Stay tuned to our Instagram at BTTB Podcast to be the first to hear who it is. Mm-hmm. And just tune in then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where we mm-hmm. are going to keep taking you
back to the best. Bye.
Bye.
I know that was very like,
if you believe.
Oh, we've got a picture perfect plan. I can see the orange balls dropping.
Okay. Bye.
Oh, I forgot. Bye. I thought we ended it. Bye.